Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. The exhibition, Ida O'Keeffe, Escaping Georgia's Shadow, brings together 35 paintings, prints, and photographs, exploring the artist's mastery of color and composition, as well as her complex relationship with her well-known sister, Georgia O'Keeffe. The show will be on view at the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown, Massachusetts, through October 14th. Organized by the Dallas Museum of Art and curated by Sue Canterbury, the Pauline Gill Sullivan Associate Curator of American Art, the exhibition debuted in Dallas in 2018 and is the first ever solo museum exhibition of works by Ida Tenaik O'Keeffe and the most comprehensive survey of the artist's work to date. Robert Wiesenberger is the Associate Curator of Contemporary Projects at the Clark, and he led me through the exhibition.
Most people aren't aware that there was an Ida O'Keeffe. I wasn't, and the curator also wasn't when she began her research. Ida was the younger sister of Georgia by just 2 years, and those 2 years made a big difference in their relative hierarchy, Georgia being the eldest in the family of many siblings. And of course, Georgia O'Keeffe is a household name. This exhibition is about giving new visibility to an artist who's really been forgotten entirely, and that's Ida O'Keeffe, who had so much of the same artistic training as Georgia, who came up in some of the same contexts, and yet, because of many structural limitations and constraints working against her, and because of sibling rivalry, never became the household name that Georgia is. So this exhibition explores what might have been had Ida O'Keeffe had all of the opportunities that she deserved.
How is the exhibition organized?
The exhibition is organized roughly chronologically. It's comprised entirely of Ida O'Keeffe's work, none of Georgia's, except for the first gallery, which is all photos by Alfred Stieglitz, Georgia O'Keeffe's partner and one of the preeminent modernist photographers, gallerists, impresarios in the United States. The exhibition includes paintings, prints, and even printed matter by Ida O'Keeffe. So it's a huge range stylistically and also in terms of media, and it represents the lion's share of what she produced that's known to exist today.
What do we learn from the photographs?
The photos in this first gallery are all from the summer of 1924, when Ida and Georgia were at Stieglitz's lake house. And these were the kind of halcyon days of their relationship. This is when the three were getting along swimmingly. Georgia and Ida were quite close, and you see a sort of jovial relationship between them. You see this rare, unguarded moment of Georgia, who is normally quite austere in front of the camera, laughing and having a good time with her sister. But we wanted to begin with the portraits of Ida on her own terms. These are portraits by Alfred Stieglitz, who took a great interest in Ida, to put it lightly. He actually flirted shamelessly with her, tried to seduce her, it seems, unsuccessfully. But the first photos in this exhibition are of Ida on her own terms. They're then joined by photos of the sisters having a great time together, and then their relationship sort of ossifying into something much more serious as a prefiguring of their falling out just a few years later. One thing I wanted to say about the show overall is that this show is about Ida, first and foremost, and even typographically we put her name at the top. So, of course, when we think of O'Keeffe, we have an artist in mind, but this show is first and foremost about giving Ida the spotlight.
So we walk through the first gallery into this next space. What do we have in here?
So this gallery shows some of Ida's first oil paintings. At the time that Ida studied art, and she had many of the same art teachers growing up as Georgia, oil painting was not something that was deemed fit for a young woman to learn. Art was taught under the rubric of domestic arts, and oil painting was something more serious that men were expected to master. And so the first works that you see in this gallery, which are from the mid and late 1920s, show her getting acquainted with the medium, trying her hand at different sort of formal approaches. And the works on this wall, some of them were in her first New York exhibition, which was a group show actually curated by Georgia O'Keeffe. And Georgia very generously offered her sister a role in this show. And Ida, in deference to her sister, identified herself not as Ida O'Keeffe, but as Ida Tenaik, using her family name as her last name so as not to challenge her sister. The work was well reviewed in the press at the time, and you see, for example, this work in the middle, this really gem-like stylized still life of a single toadstool on a white ground, sort of floating in space, and it's ringed by these kind of concentric circles of lighter and darker brown, and it evokes, for some, the work of the American modernist Arthur Dove, of whom Ida would have been well aware. He was certainly in the Stieglitz and O'Keeffe circle as a great American modernist of that moment, but I think it really shows her incredible skill at handling paint. The even smaller work beside it, the Duck Totem Pipe, is a lovely still life in its own right, but it also shows Ida's enduring curiosity and interest in the culture of American Indians, and she would mount a lot of self-motivated research. She would ultimately publish a small third-grade reader about American Indian culture, so she really was a polymath. It's really important to mention in this context that Ida trained as both a teacher and a nurse, and worked intermittently as both of those. And so she moves constantly. Some of it, you would think, because of Wanderlust, and she loves seeing the world, but really, in the aftermath of the Great Depression, given the scarcity of options for artists generally, and certainly women in particular, she's moving constantly to take work. She works as a teacher, she works as a nurse, and moves about 10 times in as many years. And so she practices her art on the margins. In the mornings, in the evenings, she has a full teaching load. It's clear from the archival documents, and so she's really intent on being a professional artist.
This is an audio tour of Ida O'Keeffe Escaping George's Shadow, which is on view at the Clark Art Institute through October 14th.
This scrapbook here that we're looking at, this tome, was really the kind of Rosetta Stone for the exhibition that cracked open the case of Ida's professional artistic career. It shows how meticulously Ida documented her own artistic career. So you see a clipping from the San Antonio Evening News from 1938, headlined "Famous Artist Thrilled by Latin American Color and Native Beauty of San Antonio and Texas." And that famous artist is Ida. And so she really was documenting some of the outstanding reviews she was getting, not just in regional papers, but in the New York Times and the New Yorker. One thing to mention is, you can see a small slipped-in invitation for her first solo show in Midtown Manhattan in 1933. And that exhibition is of an artist named Ida Ten Eyck O'Keeffe. And the strong positive reviews for that exhibition described her as part of a sisterhood of artists. And it mentioned that Georgia was her sister, that another sister, Catherine, was also a promising artist. And that fact sent Georgia, who at that moment already independently was having a mental breakdown, in part because of the extraordinary pressures exerted by Stieglitz, who was quite cruel to her. Georgia demanded that Ida and Catherine both stop making art and insisted that she be the only serious artist in the family. Catherine obliged, and as we can see here, Ida refused. Ida continued making art, and the two went their separate ways. They really split from there. I think one of the takeaways from this show is not that Ida was in some way the superior talent. There's no question that Georgia is a brilliant, monumental artist of the 20th century, but it has a lot to do also with the challenges facing women artists of that period, and again, with this question of what might have been, how might things have turned out differently then, and how might things look differently today if those who have talent and show promise and work hard get the resources they need to do their work. It's a sad story in that way, but you see the incredibly promising work of this really forgotten artist.
On the next wall over here is a series of paintings of the Highland Lighthouse. Let's talk about these. It's a very, very different style than the paintings we've looked at so far.
So Ida managed to study at the Teachers College at Columbia University and get her MFA there. And she studies with someone named Charles Martin, an American modernist, one of whose insights is to see a composition and have it resolve into its basic geometric forms and to really think about it as an elemental set of parts compositionally. Ida then spends a summer in 1931 in a painting course on Cape Cod in Provincetown, which is another major artistic center for modernism at that moment. And she takes as her subject a single lighthouse, the Highland Light in Truro, and she performs, as you can see on this wall, a series of different operations of abstraction on it. So it becomes her subject, and you see here all six of the extant known lighthouses from this series, and they're shown in sequence. You see that she's doing something that has some resonances with precisionism as an American modernist movement. There's something cubo-futurist about it. Mm-hmm. There's implied motion.
I was going to say there's a lot of movement.
Absolutely. And in each one, she's trying something different. So you see in some cases, she's really interested in emphasizing volume. In others, there's a strict flatness. But in all, the lines of the light radiating outward from a single source, in the third one, for example, the beam of the lighthouse curves around to very elegantly and economically become the roof line of the structure below it. Mm-hmm. So there's this wonderful formal coherence that these works have. But in each, she's trying something different. As you might see, the color scheme for this exhibition was inspired by the palette of the lighthouses. And so we started in a space that has these dark blue tones in part to absorb light and protect the photos in them. And then we open out into this buttery luminous yellow. And then we end in a kind of cool gray and the sort of sober weighing up of her legacy. One of the things underlying this series is a compositional technique called dynamic symmetry. And it became popular at this time as a way of bringing the golden mean, the Fibonacci sequence, and these kind of classical proportions to a subject matter. So if you look at our multimedia guide, you can see one of these paintings and slide your finger across it. And as you do, grid lines appear on top of it, spirals and grid lines, and suddenly these compositions each make sense. And we know that Ida was using these because in some cases on the back you see in pencil, she's drawn out ratios, equations, curves. So there is a mathematical rigor that makes these paintings work.
That's incredible, because they're also just, you know, very pleasing. But that's what they say about those equations, that it's like they're naturally pleasing to the human eye because of math.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Curator Rob Wiesenberger is telling us about Ida O'Keeffe, Escaping George's Shadow at the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown, Massachusetts.
This section is dedicated to Ida's prints, her works on paper. And in some ways, the print medium is the one that Ida arguably most invests in and takes most seriously and most makes her own. In fact, she publishes in print journals of the time her own approach to the monotype. And so you see on this wall landscapes, but ones that have this abstract quality, this kind of stormy, painterly expressiveness. And these are both here monotypes. So this is a case in which the artist is applying ink directly to the plate with a brush, with tools, with fingers, or alternatively applying ink and then removing from it subtractively, but then making a single impression, and that's the one. So they do have this churning, stormy quality to them. And the prints in this gallery also attest to how much she traveled and how much she was on the road and how much of America she saw. And as she mentioned in the article that she published on the monotype medium, it's something that you could make on the go. So she pointed out that you could use, in lieu of a printing press, you could use a clothes wringer, you could even use an electric iron. So there's this wonderful poignancy in this woman who is working, as we know, all day as either a teacher or a nurse, and her art is happening in the in-between times, using an electric iron to press her prints. And she's able to make them on the go. She doesn't have a studio. She doesn't have assistants. We know that she doesn't have any gallery representation, which she tries to get, and it becomes clear in some cases that Stieglitz, in fact, thwarts. So she's really on her own to a large degree. But the print work, both the monotypes and the etchings and dry points, I think are some of her most accomplished. These two prints, which are sort of neighbors in the exhibition, one from 1937, one from 1940, the first a dry point, the second a monotype. In one case, this is a scene from the Oregon coast, and you really get the sense of this very precise scratching into the plate that almost sculpts out this single very pointy rock formation on the coast. Whereas in the other, it's a bit more painterly, but she's depicting Manhattan from her time living there. And you see skyscrapers and church steeples resolve into basic but monumental geometric forms of prisms and triangles. So in both cases, you're seeing two quite distinctive approaches, but also how far she's traveled.
Ida O'Keefe, Escaping George's Shadow, is on view at the Clark through October 14th.
This is the last section of the exhibition. Yeah.
So this last gallery is really fascinating because you're seeing
very different things.
Very different things, indeed, made within a very short time span. And you're seeing works from the mid and late 30s, the early 40s. And on the one hand, we have a wall of some of Ida's floral portraits, you could say, from her travels, some more stylized than others, some which have some resemblance to O'Keeffe, some which are fairly distinctive. You also see a work that I wanted to have on a wall to itself. It's called Creation. It's from around 1936. The colors, the forms are so distinctive for her, and it is really, in this exhibition, her only foray into total abstraction. It still references the four elements of earth, wind, water, and fire, and as complex a composition as it is, it's also defined by the strictures of dynamic symmetry and the grid lines of the golden mean and the Fibonacci sequence. And as different as can be across the gallery, we see these two scenes, which are both nocturnes. In this work from 1938, you're seeing a lime kiln, this vernacular building that is abstracted and given almost metaphysical form. You can see the light source doesn't quite make sense. There's something quite magical happening in this nocturne, this night scene. And beside it, Stargazing in Texas from the same year, it's a very confusing composition. It's sort of topsy-turvy. You have a single figure in the center. The narrative is quite unclear. Figures toppling to either side of her. And how autobiographical it is or isn't, we'll never know. But one lovely detail in this original frame is that you see the stars of the night sky are actually applied to the frame itself. And so some of them are cut from tin by Ida O'Keefe, and others are adhesive stars applied to the frame, the kind that a teacher would put on a good paper. And these were very well reviewed in her time. So Ida dies in 1961, but her production really peters out through the 1950s. She finally settles in Whittier, California, in Southern California. And so this is some of the last of her known production. So in this final section, we look at what was her legacy? What does this mean for art history? How can the canon be rewritten really by a single show? And that's what this exhibition has done. And there were so many obstacles in Ida O'Keefe's way, and they had to do with financial circumstances, with the difficulty of being a woman artist at this time, the lack of support, the lack of gallery representation. And Ida, who was kind and seemingly guileless, and a kind of foil to Georgia's intensity, Georgia was not particularly kind to Ida, and the only rejoinder that is recorded that Ida had that was a bit pointed was to say that she, Ida, would have been famous too if only she had had a Stieglitz. And of course, Georgia hated hearing that. And by that, she was thinking of someone who would, was this powerful figure who would support and promote her art. So there is this question of what might have been had her career unfolded otherwise.
Robert Wiesenberger is the Associate Curator of Contemporary Projects at the Clark, and he took us through Ida O'Keefe, Escaping George's Shadow. The exhibition is on view at the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown, Massachusetts through October 14th. To learn more, visit clarkart.edu. That link will be posted along with this audio tour at wamc.org/roundtable.